Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. It is November 3rd, 2016. First of all, I apologize for about the last week and a half. My web page had not been updated, if you have not noticed. Most of it should be back, and the web page was not affected, but I got slammed pretty hard, lost two computers, internet down, power down. Yeah, it was pretty brutal. Starting Monday, I was able to get do my show, etc., but the updating the web page I was not able to do. So anyway, page should be updated with last week's show, with last week's paid cast. Many people writing in going, what's going on? Well, it was difficult to respond. But like I say, this did not affect the web page. They've stopped hacking my web page because they know we can be back up in minutes. We keep good backups, and so that's kind of a frustrating effort for them. So now they've gone to more direct methods of silence and trying to silence me. At any rate, the positive side of this is that much of what is, I'm not going to go into detail, but things are a lot more solid here now than they were before. But I think there's a few people out there that may not want you to hear what I have to say. Not that that's any great surprise. They simply don't want any alternative messages being driven out to you, to the people. And a poorly educated science public is a very vulnerable population because science allows you to think correctly and deduce, etc. What's being pawned off on the public out there for science is just complete garbage. And so anyway, I won't go into a lot more on that, but things should be back to normal, stable. The last week's radio show archive should be up there now, and the paid cast also for last week. Last week's paid cast topic, Radiation and You, it's an ongoing series, and that, the specific topic, Space Radiation, What NASA's Not Telling You. And this week's paid cast, really, really an important topic. As you know, I spent probably 25 years of my life in the telecommunications industry. And for decades, people really didn't know that I was doing that. And of course, I kept that private because that was my private life. And in around 2007, I published my book, Calculate Primes, where I broke the RSA codes by developing the system for directly calculating prime numbers and breaking them down, finding factors very easily, etc. In fact, 7 years later to the exact date, I published a book called Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. But this week's paid cast topic, it's a new series that I'm starting. And remember, every month I'll have at least one episode of Tesla's Mind. But this week is on cybersecurity, the nuts and bolts of telecommunication protocols, retransmission, secure computing, the NSA backdoors, and hacking. So that's a mouthful, but of course at a level that anybody can understand. So I encourage you, if you have not signed up for the paid cast, you can sign up as just the subscription. And then I encourage you to buy back to the beginning in August, because these are in sequence, like the Tesla's Mind series, etc. It's $3.95 a month, so that's about the price of a cup of coffee. And this does something, it benefits you. You get a deep dive into these esoteric, scientific, mathematical topics every week, because this show, I cover current events, things like that. But anyway, make sure you go there to the webpage, jmccsci.com. Okay, so tonight's main science topic, I'm going to be talking about an article. It's based on an article that appeared in science.com, and it said, How the Earth Formed. And so I'm going to go through a bits and pieces of that and just show you how ludicrous that is. Oh, by the way, the people that emailed in a number of weeks ago, maybe a month ago now, for volunteers, people who wanted to volunteer to do, I have some projects and some other things. Those emails I think we're going to recover, but I haven't gotten those back yet. So if you want to re-email that the address, and this is just for this project, just for volunteers. It's not a place to communicate with me directly. It's called info@jmccsci.com. info@jmccsci.com. And then this is for people who want to volunteer, because I had a project and I didn't quite get it together. I've been really busy with a lot of things going on here, a lot of good things. But anyway, please re-email me so that we can keep you up to date on what's going on with that. So that we're still rebuilding email, too. That was something we keep archives, but there again, it's very difficult. All this takes time. But first, as always, a few announcements. There's an announcement, and people have been asking me about this. Here's the story. Somebody has detected some pulsing, electromagnetic pulsing going on a star. And they don't know what's causing it, but they're saying it's aliens. So, you know, has NASA detected alien life? No. No, the universe is filled with electromagnetic activity, let's put it that way. And no, has NASA discovered aliens? No. Or SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence? No, they have not. Pure baloney. Okay, another topic. This is just getting out of hand. National Geographic came out this week and announced they have a new program. It's called Mars. Everybody is jumping on the Mars bandwagon. And so National Geographic now has, and this obviously took a lot of production time. These shows are developed probably over a two-year period, from conception to screen scripting, actors, voice contracting, etc. So this was a couple years in the making. I believe it's starting now. And what's going on? This hype about Mars was pre-planned by the CIA disinformation crew years ago. The National Geographic is a mouthpiece for disinformation science. But as I announced on previous shows, Elon Musk's now supposedly going to Mars. Boeing got into the game. NASA wants to go to Mars. Obama's claiming he wants to be the president that says we are going to Mars, you know, do the John F. Kennedy, you know, we're going into outer space deal. You know, what's so pathetic is that he didn't do a thing for outer space during his 8 years as president. You know, the closest he got to space is golfing. But anyway, you know, to claim he was the guy that initiated the man's trek to Mars is just beyond absurd. He didn't do a thing. You know, in the last month of his second term, he goes, "Now I'm the president that's taking us to Mars." You know, come on. Excuse me. But anyway, this push to slam information out to the public about Mars, and there's others too. Jeff Bezos is going to Mars. Everybody's going to Mars. The only problem is nobody's going to Mars. The issue, as I have stated before, is radiation. Nobody has a clue what to do about space radiation. Anyway, I've talked about that before. But here's the deal. Let's put it like this. The old crap, I mean, excuse me for using kind of a blunt word, but of black holes, dark matter, dark energy, habitable planets, Planet Nine, climate change, these scientific topics are so worn out. They are so worn out that they can't, you know, nobody's reading these science magazines anymore, so they need a new splash topic. And everybody's jumping on the Mars deal. Believe me. Here's the story. If, say, you're a young scientist engineer, and you're hired by NASA to be in the Mars program, you are going to retire as an old man or woman before NASA goes to Mars. That's the story. That's the reality. So it's just a money-making deal. Congress passed $20 billion appropriation, and there's going to be more on the table. So everybody's drooling at the, you know, they got the drool bucket on, or the, yeah, what they call it, the drool bucket, you know, because they're salivating so heavily on getting to Mars. Typically, I don't talk about politics on this show, and I think what's going on now even supersedes politics, because what we're in right now is a epic time. And I don't talk about Trump, I talk about the Trump phenomenon. What they're afraid of is the world waking up. Now, this past week in England, you know, Brexit was a paper vote. They insisted on paper. Parliament authorized the public to vote to remove themselves from the European Union. And it passed by what one might consider a landslide vote. The Parliament authorized it, but then the court system, which is obviously controlled by the Rothschild banking system, comes in and says, well, maybe it wasn't proper. And so nobody's really buying that, but you see what they're trying to do. They're trying to do anything to stall it and say, well, we'll release ourselves from the European Union in 2 years. And they want Parliament to come in and authorize and oversee this or whatever. And the people in England have had it. And of course, they devaluated the British pound by 17%, and it's still going down relative. But see, International Monetary Fund exchange rates are fixed by the European bankers. These are the tools that they use to hurt people. It goes back to like Robin Hood days when the sheriff didn't like Robin Hood. So he went out and hurt the people. And he said, turn in that, as soon as you turn in the outlaw, I'll stop the high taxes and burning your houses down. These are age-old tricks. There's nothing new under the sun here. So they are trying to say, oh, now it costs more to buy a cell phone in England. Isn't it terrible? No, these people want their freedom back. But in the United States, what's going on now, and let me tell you something, if people are on the hedge about whether they should vote or not, here's your option. You know, the evil queen of the West, a psychopathological liar that has more dirty laundry and baggage than you can shake a stick at, the most recent reopening of the email scandal, here's what it amounts to. You know, Huma Abedin, who has now probably fled the country and is in exile, her husband had 650,000 emails that came out of our government. And he's an estranged congressman because of bad activity, but the way they got him was through pedophilia. He was involved in a pedophilia ring, and they all are, in Washington, D.C. So this may be digging down one of the deeper caverns in all of Washington, D.C. It includes the Clintons and a lot of people in Washington, D.C. Even Obama and Michelle Obama canceled all their appearances for Hillary in this last super important week. They are distancing themselves from her because if somebody goes down, they're going to just let them go down. They're not going to take the entire Washington, D.C. ship with them. You know, so this is what's going on. I mean, we've seen this with Nixon. Once the press is starting to turn in these last few critical days, they've carried her along through falling over, seizures, you know, going kind of epileptic in front of audiences, and the guy has to come out and tell her to keep talking, all of this. And the news media just keeps walking on like nothing. But this last one, where they're about ready to pop open this pedophilia ring, which is rampant in Washington, D.C., this is where a lot of people step off the merry-go-round. And that's what's going on. So at any rate, in terms of voting, here's the reality. And I've set this up. I'll talk about the top 10 ways to cheat at elections. Here they are, the top 10. Cast early ballots for those registered but no longer living in an area. Okay, so if you're like, we've already seen a lot of corruption people rigging, sending thugs out to break up campaign speeches, etc. They now know that the DNC sent Bernie Sanders supporters, fake Bernie Sanders supporters, out to stop Donald Trump. You know, this is the Hillary campaign. But anyway, if you, here's the number one way to fix elections. They go into all of the registered voters. And these are people that have moved away from the state, have died, or no longer registered in that area, moved to a different area, whatever. And they locate all these people, as many as they can, and then they vote for them. These people don't go back and say, is somebody voting in my name in this area? That's the one way. That's estimated 25 to 30 million people have incorrectly registered voting registrations. And those are all going to get used. And that's why if you look in the, like the Gore, Bush election, at the end of the day, at the end of the night, there was a whole big pile of votes that got counted in. That's what happens, because they got to wait to the end of the day, because if the guy walks in to the voting polling station and says, hey, I'm here, and it says, oh, no, some you already voted, and it's like, wait a minute, no. So they got to wait till the end of the day, and then all of those votes get cast. That's why you saw those that big change in votes in Florida and other places that gave George Bush the win. Okay, that's the first way. Throwing out mailers, the people who mail in their votes, they get to an election center in a polling station, they have it staffed with people that are insiders, they throw away the other guy's mail. Okay, number three, false registrations of people. Now, here's what it takes. They found out that if somebody receives a paycheck and has some kind of a picture ID, they can register to vote on the spot. So they give these people a paycheck, a phony paycheck, and then a phony ID. And that includes, number four, illegal aliens. So there's a potential 50 million illegal aliens. How many of those can they get to vote? Then, voting machines. There's three main forms of voter fraud with electronic voting machines. One is to flip the vote when you do select. You go down and you go in the electronic voting machine, you punch all the candidates that you want to vote for, and then at the end you hit select. Then it flips the votes. And people actually see this, and they go over and report it, and they go, oh, that machine is bad, yeah. And then they might send them to another one, but they can fix this. Number six, they change the votes that are already voted. Even if you voted for with a paper ballot, that vote can be changed as it's being sent off to central processing. Number seven, fractional voting. This is something that just came out of this past week, where they can take votes and remotely do this with computer systems, take a vote for Trump and fractionalize it and say it's worth 1/100th of a vote, and then take the Hillary Clinton votes and say a Hillary Clinton vote is worth 1,000 votes. And they can do this. It's called fractional voting. Okay, number eight, the polls being used before the election to give media bias. Now, the poll rigging has been, I talked about that last week, about how polls are not a proper use of statistical methods. They never have been. But using stacked polls and then publishing those results and saying, look, you know, Hillary Clinton is ahead by this amount, when there was an event this past week where Trump had an event and they showed, you know, 10,000 people there. Hillary Clinton had an event nearby, and there were probably less than 100 people there. So this is indicative that the actual numbers are, and of course there's people who don't go to rallies, the people who have been voting for a long time probably don't go. But at any rate, the numbers are so skewed, and this is what we call the Bernie Sanders effect. Bernie Sanders was filling stadiums. Hillary Clinton couldn't get 500 people in a small college auditorium, and she wins. You know, that's because it was fixed. News media bias. You know, the news media has been 100% against Trump. And there's a reason, because he represents taking down this system where they all make their money. And that's true in science also, by the way. You know, National Geographic is a perfect example of people making money off of science and the government specified program. And then number 10 way to cheat at elections with the Electoral College, paying off those people to switch their vote. It's very corrupt. There's only 500 of them, 512 or something like that. And so the Electoral College is another way of fixing elections. So those are the top 10 ways to fix an election, and they're all being used. So what I'm telling you is that when you go out to vote, I'm suggesting to anybody I know, vote for Trump. You're voting for a future, not just Trump, but the Trump phenomenon. And here's the reason. Remember, I mentioned this on John Moore's show this Wednesday. Remember the old battle scenes? You've seen them in the movie 100 times, and there's a walled city, and the approaching army is charging. And the first wave of, 5,000 foot soldiers are coming up to the wall, and they're getting arrows and, boiling oil thrown on them and all kinds of other things. And, sure, you're going to lose most of those people. But what does that do? That uses up the arrows and the oil and all the resources of those people on the inside of the walled city. And then you come up with the second wave, which is stronger. And then you come up with the third wave, which is stronger. And then finally, you just wear these people inside the walled city out. You just wear them out to the point where they can't, they break down, and you invade the city and win. Okay, that's what you have to do. The same thing is true with voting for Trump. Many of your votes are going to be changed. Many of your votes are going to be not counted. They're going to go in the garbage. And so consider yourself the wave of people who are going to have their vote destroyed. They're trying to block the exit polls right now. There's a court action to prevent exit polls during this election, a completely honest way to determine what the voting was, because standard policy says that if the exit poll is 5%, only 5%, 5% different from the reported vote, that's enough to call it election fraud. So the standard, what would you call them, the electorate, the people responsible for the election, don't want exit polls. In fact, they've stopped. They said they're not going to do it. So there's private groups that are going out, going to take exit polls, and they're trying to block them, and they want to come in. Obama has said he's bringing in UN troops. Get this, UN troops to make sure that nobody takes exit polls. This is where it's going, folks. This is where your country is going. So what I'm telling you is, when you go out, vote for Trump, and just know that you are part of the population that is possibly going to have your vote dumped. But if the numbers are so great, it's going to be so obvious that, like I said, I listed the top 10 ways to cheat at voter fraud. Remember Lyndon Johnson going around in the cemeteries in around the country? They were taking down names off the stones, in the cemetery. They were taking names down, registering them to vote. And the expression was, Lyndon Johnson would say, that guy's got as much right to vote as anybody. But the election fraud is just rampant, and they don't want Trump in there. I want him in there. I don't agree with everything he says, but believe me, the amount of baggage on the other side is just phenomenal. And this is, like Trump says, drain the swamp. So excuse me for getting a little political. The election is next Tuesday. Go out, and typically in past elections, I said to vote was to support the system that's corrupt and broken. This is your chance to fix it and have somebody in there that's going to drain the swamp. I love that term. I love the term drain the swamp because that's what we're talking about, the Washington swamp. I've talked about this before. Take a barbed wire fence, surround Washington, D.C., and call it a prison. And with that, I won't talk about politics again. Okay, so this week, Saturn's North Pole reportedly changed colors. Now, remember that the South and North Pole of Saturn have these strange patterns, but I believe it's the North Pole that has this beautiful hexagonal pattern. And I'm working on background material, I'm not releasing it quite yet, on that phenomenon, but the fact that it changed colors. Now, this you might think is an amazing announcement, but remember that the great red spot of Jupiter has changed colors. Many of these cyclonic storm systems, and remember, these are high-level vapor clouds, vapor in the cloud systems that we see. And so they can peer down now with infrared spectroscopy, etc., and they can look down in and see the various colors. And a color is indicative of a chemical. And if you looked at the spectral analysis of the colors, you could start to identify species, percentages of species, populations of chemical species in the atmosphere. So what has happened? Right now, for example, let me just divert off to Earth. Earth had a big aurora session this past week, and that's because we had a magnetic reversal. What's a magnetic reversal? Okay, now this doesn't mean that the Earth flipped and we're all dead. No, this happens all the time. In my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, I go through a very long dissertation showing the difference between magnetic pole and geographical pole, which is the celestial pole or the rotational pole. And they are not coincident. The magnetic pole is not coincident with the rotational geographical North Pole. But this past week, we had absolutely a magnetic reversal. This happens when the solar wind, which is typically aligned north and north with Earth, when the solar wind comes in with a southerly pointing magnetic field. And when that happens, it creates a tremendous amount of chaos because those supporting magnetic fields, that's another thing I talk about in my weather book, the Principia Meteorologia, Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather, and also in the Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes book, I talk about the coupling in the five-layer magnetic field, that the model of the magnetic field is mainly its plasma physics and the structure of the magnetic field. So anyway, now let's go back to Saturn. Saturn has a very powerful magnetic field. It has co-rotating electrical bands, electrical current bands in its atmosphere, like Earth, like Jupiter. And unlike Venus does not, of course, Mercury, little Mercury, doesn't even have a significant atmosphere. And so Venus does not have a moon. Now, in my work also, I reference some of the original work that talks about there's an empirical correlation between moons and magnetic fields. If you look at the planets that have magnetic fields, they also have moons. And the planets that do not have magnetic fields do not have large moons. Like Mars, for example, does not have a significant magnetic field. You can find bits and pieces of geomagnetic fields locked in the surface of Mars, just like you do at Earth. But that gives you the basic, very small magnetic field. But the bulk of Earth's magnetic field is made up of electrical currents that are in the ionosphere, in the jet streams, in the Van Allen belts, and then in the outer coupled magnetic field, which is what we call our sheath, magnetic sheath, some people call it the bow shock. But basically, as the solar wind comes in and it's the positive ions and protons, as they see our magnetic field and the electrons come in, the electrons go one way, the protons and positively charged ions go the other direction, and they support our geomagnetic field and all these other layers. They're all coupled together. So when an opposite polarity magnetic field comes in the solar wind, it wreaks havoc. with our magnetic field, and it breaks down, and all of a sudden the Earth becomes more of a comet than it was before. And so this aurora comes into the North Pole, and that happens with Saturn also. So these are solar system-wide electromagnetic events that are coupled with the overall electric current in the solar system. So at any rate, quickly mention also, this past week there was an announcement that a bus-sized asteroid almost hit Earth. And I do not want to confirm that because I did not really detect this myself. I don't trust the mainstream science media any farther than I can throw them. Or, you know, they're just unreliable. And so a lot of these stories that come out are really fictitious. They're made-up stories. So unless there's real scientific evidence for that, then it's a questionable announcement. Just a quick announcement. I typically don't talk about my water filters on this program. I should, because like anybody, I depend on that for sales and my, you know, income to support this program, etc. The paid cast helps a lot, even though it's just $3.95 a month per person. If enough people sign up, then that's a big help, because in the past, I was supporting everything literally out of, you know, whatever came in. And so this has been a big help. I want to let you know my red letter sale is still on. The water filters on the webpage, on the sales page. But this is something I noticed. Other people are still selling the old Saracil filter elements along with the black carbon filter elements, and which I stopped selling those ages ago, because the Saracil is the Dalton previous generation filter elements. They're ceramic. They look exactly like the ceramics that I sell, but mine have the all-in-one filter capacity, where you get the fluoride and arsenic and everything all-in-one filter element. There's two things that people don't tell you, and on the big shows, I won't mention any of them by name. First of all, they're still selling that old technology that needs add-on filters to just do arsenic and fluoride. And second of all, they only give you two filters. I give you four. With the kitchen standard, the main kitchen unit, gravity water filter, you get four filters from me for literally the same price as you get two of the old Saracil filters with the stainless container if you buy from someone else. So that's, make sure you look at that. You're getting four filters from me, four filter elements, instead of two. And that's about $100 right there, you know, in terms of cost. So just remember, yeah, I don't take donations, and I encourage you to support all of the talk show hosts out there, all of them, because they're all, you know, even the big guys are trying to make income to support their operation. But I know my listeners are faithful, so if you're predisposed to buy some water filters or you want the books, etc., the Recalendar Sun Star Clock, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. And remember, this is a commercial-free show. I don't fill it with sponsors or ads or all that stuff. Everything here comes out of whatever I get, and that's it. I don't, you know, and that's why I started the paid cast at the suggestion of a listener, and it's really working out great, because I needed an extra hour a week to go into deep topics, scientific topics. And also, it helps you and it helps me. On to the main science topic. How was the Earth formed? Now, this is an article that appeared in space.com on October 31st for Halloween, and it's with a space.com contributor. And so, what I'm going to do is go through this a little bit and just pick it apart piece by piece. And now, as I read through this, you're going to realize that this is just such fairy tale science. It's just talky-talky, oh, the Earth did this, and then the solar system did this. But if you look at this, even on first-level thinking, it doesn't make sense. And then I'm going to go into what really happened. So starting out, it says, this article says, Although planets surround stars in the galaxy, how they form remains a subject of debate. Despite the wealth of worlds in our own solar system, scientists still aren't certain how the planets are built. Currently, two theories are duking it out for the role of champion. As if either one of them makes any sense at all. But anyway, excuse me. The first and most widely accepted theory, core accretion, works well with the formation of terrestrial planets like Earth, but has problems with giant gas planets. The second, the disk instability method may account for the creation of these giant planets. It says scientists are continuing to study planets in and out of the solar system in an effort to better understand which of these methods is more accurate. Then it says the core accretion model, they're going to start with that one first. They start out by saying approximately 4.6 billion years ago. Okay, stop right there. Stop right there. You know where they got that number? That number has been around for 50 years. They picked up some rocks on the surface of the Earth, made some radioactive dating calculations, and said those rocks are around 4.6 billion years old. And that's the age of the solar system. Well, let me explain something. Nobody has ever gone down into the core of the Earth or more than a mile deep in drilling or any other kind of sampling of the Earth. So how is that representative of the core of the Earth? I mean, it boggles the mind to imagine that any sane person even would give this a third grade consideration of reality. Then they go on and say, okay, this is the 4.6 billion years ago. The solar system was a cloud of dust and gas known as the solar nebula. Gravity collapsed the material in on itself as it began to spin, forming the sun in the center of the nebula. I mean, look at this. I mean, this is fairy tale science. This is what's taught all the way up from, well, from kindergarten, if they talk about such things, through grade school, high school, university level. I taught university level astronomy, and I had to gag when I taught this stuff, and I told the students, I told them, hey, this is garbage. And then, of course, I was not allowed to teach my material in there as because it was out of the level of the syllabus. So you couldn't teach anything that was not in the syllabus, or otherwise you would be fired. My time of teaching these courses was in the mid-1990s, early 1990s to mid-1990s. And so what I did is I took all the textbooks and that were available. These salesmen from textbook companies would come into my office and try and sell me textbooks. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to take one from all of them. So I did. I got about 20 textbooks. And so then I had my students as a project go through all the textbooks, and each little group of students, they had like a form to fill out. And one group of students may have had Venus and other galaxies and other solar system formation or whatever. And the point was to see if all of these 20 textbooks were the same throughout. And the other thing we noticed by happenstance was that the editors of some of the textbooks were the authors of others. And the authors of those textbooks were the editors of these. And so what they did is they tried to develop various levels of textbooks, some for the general public, some a little more technical, some concentrating more on astrophysics like stellar physics, etc. But at any rate, these were all general college astronomy textbooks. And across the line, if you took a subject, they all said the same thing. And so there was a collusion on the part of astronomers to say the same thing relative to all these theories. And I have a DVD with the result of that study. It was done through the grant, through the college where I was teaching, and the university system. It was a grant, and I had a professional photographer come in, a great guy from Norway, I believe, and he did the filming, did all the editing. And so at any rate, that was the textbook study done in 1991. It was called Textbook for the Astronomy for the 90s. And you can see that. That's in my DVD set on my webpage. Now, okay, let me quick. I don't want to spend a lot of time reading this, but it says, with the rise of the sun, the remaining material began to clump up. Small particles drew together, bound by the force of gravity, into larger particles. Okay, stop right there again. The studies that have been done show that this element, this phase of this supposed collapse, does not happen. Because we see dust clouds, vast dust clouds, out in outer space, and they're not collapsing. This has been known for a long time. Then it says, the solar wind swept away lighter elements such as hydrogen, helium, and closer regions, leaving only heavy rocky materials to create smaller terrestrial worlds like Earth. Okay, so I'm not going to go on and read any more of this. The problem is, if I do, some moron out there, some of my detractors, would try and pick this up and say, this is what Jim McCanney says. So I'm not going to bait myself by doing this. But anyway, suffice it to say that what they're doing here is, all of a sudden there's solar wind. Don't a few things have to happen before you have solar wind? Doesn't the star have to form? And this has been the problem all along. When I was at Cornell in 1979 to 81, I talked with a guy named Hans Bethe. And this is when the solar wind was just beginning to be understood a little bit. It was known about, but in the previous model, which Hans Bethe helped develop for the sun, I mean, that's why he got his Nobel Prize, was in solar physics, in the chemistry of the nuclear chemistry, it's called, of the physics of the sun. But they couldn't explain where the solar wind came from, and they still can't. There's no reason for this boiling off, and it's not even boiling off, it's not even respiration type of process. The solar wind comes shooting out, and it's primarily protons, and that's something I discovered when I was there, is that there was an excess current of protons, and that they did not understand how to measure this properly. But at any rate, so all of a sudden in this space.com article, they're coming out and just saying all of a sudden there's solar wind. I mean, they aren't there a few steps missing here? It's like saying, if you're talking about birth and conception, you'd say, okay, the baby is conceived, and now the baby's 2 years old. What happened in the middle there? That's the equivalent in terms of solar physics. And so this little summary, which of course is for the general public, and some professionals might say, well, we have all of this all worked out. Well, yeah, with mathematical equations, and those models are basically models that really have gaping holes in a lot of unresolved conflicts. Now, I want you to take a trip into the forest. Imagine we're an explorer. We're going up into the Lewis and Clark. We're Lewis and Clark. We're going up into the areas where no European person had ever been before. You're walking into these vast forests where the trees are full grown, redwood or, big pine trees and et cetera. And you walk into this woods and there's trees falling over that are rotting with mushrooms coming out the side and mold. And they're decomposing and turning back into dirt. And you have the full growth trees that are magnificent and big. And then you have little sprouting trees that are coming up, just seedlings, 1 year, couple months old, whatever. And you come in and you pick up some dirt and you go, this forest is 4.6 million years old or something. You make some statement. There's no basis for this. There's absolutely no basis because you're looking at something that has nothing to do with all of the history that exists for this object. I mean, and this is why, in a sense, let's look at creationists who say that the world was just created, a few thousand years ago. In the scientific sense, there's as much evidence for that as there is for the universe or the solar system being 4.6 billion years old. There's an equivalent amount of evidence that the world and the solar system was created 4,600 years ago as opposed to 4.6 billion years ago. There's literally equivalent amount of evidence. Now, the one thing that I've noticed and that was central to my work was, that my work deals with comets, that comets are not dirty snowballs, that they are the discharge of the solar capacitor, et cetera, et cetera. So the end result is that these are captured, and there's this whole capture process that the planets in the solar system were captured. There's a big thing going on now, is being spread around the internet, that somehow the sun has its axis off kilter with the ecliptic. And I don't know, what happens is these stories come out, and the people that promote them, I won't mention names, but people that are promoting a lot of real bad science, even though they, and they're not scientists. But here's the problem. They're saying that the sun is tilted 60 degrees with the ecliptic. Well, the ecliptic is the plane of the orbit of Earth, an extremely minor member of the solar system. If you look at the sun's rotational axis relative to the orbit of Jupiter, they are exactly parallel. And that's what you would expect, because Jupiter was the original twin star pair of our sun. Earth, on the other hand, is not a major contributor. And now they're contributing this to some Planet 9 object that nobody has ever discovered. And so let me just divert for a minute on this, because you're going to see a lot of this in the scientific, so-called popular scientific press. Michael Brown and other people, Michael Brown is from one of the California universities, and he's been big in the discovery of Sedna and trans-Neptunian objects, including Sedna and other of the new planets they've discovered. And now they're proposing, they've only looked at a very limited area of the sky. They've discovered 6 or 9 new planets, there's Pluto-sized planets. And then they're saying, because of the orbits, they're predicting that there's some big, giant planet, many, many, many times Earth, possibly even bigger than Pluto. And they're making estimates of its orbit, etc. But the problem is they are publishing this as if it were already discovered. And so they're trying to get more funding, more telescope time, etc., to look for this object while ignoring the whole rest of the sky. And so really, really, really bad science and really bad reporting. And this is something, too, I talk about all the time. The journalists for Science Today are a bunch of young kids, green. There, you don't find any of the older seasoned reporters, but they were a bunch of old hacks who really depended on NASA to provide them with information, and they just reprinted what NASA gave them. So now you have a young crew of journalists, so-called journalists, who are doing basically the same thing, but never with the ability to ask intelligent questions. Why are you ignoring the rest of the outer solar system in your searches? Why are you just concentrating on this one area? Because if you discovered other planets in other regions of the outer solar system, instead of looking at just this one small area, then you would, all of your predictions for this Planet 9 object would go away. Because, and I've looked at the data. I talked about this last week, and I'm sorry, I said I would get a photo of these orbits posted on my webpage. I still have that, and that should be up with this week's show. But these orbits did not indicate to me, and I'm an expert on celestial mechanics and planetary orbits, etc., these wildly varying orbits do not suggest that there's a Planet 9 object out there. There are many Planet X objects out there, and so let's call them what they are, Planet X. X meaning not discovered yet, not given a name yet. And so the end result is that, these the science that's being passed off to you, the public, is really erroneous. And then they say, well, if there is such an object, how did it get here? And then they go, oh, well, early in the solar system, a star must have passed and ripped it out of our solar system and threw it out there. Just fairy tale science. Absolutely, absolutely not a shred of any real evidence to support the claims, yet it's getting published wildly all over the place on the internet, in the scientific trade magazines, as if they had already discovered it. Absolutely absurd. So what is the real story? The real story is that the galaxy is an ongoing engine. The standard theory for galactic development is that these galaxies form and then they die out and then that's the end of them. Then what I've shown in my work is, no, they're ongoing living systems and they are electrical. They are electrical, not in the formation of the galaxy. The galactic formation is purely gravitational, and that's easy to show. That's in one of my very first published papers that was peer-reviewed in the peer-reviewed astrophysics journals. But the electrical currents that are generated from the fusion engine at the core produce a current that runs down the galactic arms. And this is all part of my work. You can read about this. I have a DVD that covers this very topic. But then you see that that is the engine which pulls in the hydrogen that keeps the sun burning long term. Here's another problem with their solar model. If you took the original mass of the sun and converted it E equals mc squared into energy, and this doesn't have even the mass loss included due to solar wind, just due to the light leaving the sun at the rate it's producing light, there's not enough mass in the sun to make the sun last for even a short period of time, let alone 4.6 billion years. So the standard scientific explanations do not hold water. You have to come back to an ongoing physical system. So back to the analogy of walking in the forest. The best thing you can say about the Lewis and Clark expedition going into the big full-growth canopy forest of redwoods or whatever, and you're walking in there and you're looking at the little sprout tree, the seedling growing, and the big tree falling over, rotting, and the very fertile earth there because many trees have rotted and become soil, and then the full-growth trees that are standing tall, and the medium-sized trees that have grown out of the thousands of seedlings that start, only one or two will actually make it to medium size, and of those, only one will make it up to full growth in a given area. You're seeing the ongoing process. So the best thing, the most you can say about any of this is that it is an ongoing process. And this is my point. And this is why when I developed my theoretical work, the capture process of solar system development, it's an ongoing process. That's why Venus becoming a planet, even though in historical times, the fact that we actually have people that saw this happen, lived through the event, and wrote about it so that we know that that's what happened, this is absolutely phenomenal. This is absolutely incredible. But we know this, and it all fits the scientific story. And as I've said before, when I was at Cornell developing my plasma discharge comet model and the captured theory of solar system formation, I didn't even know about Velikovsky. It was only until later, in the early 1980s, that I even found out about Velikovsky. And I looked at his work and I said, my goodness, this corroborates exactly with what I've been doing in my scientific development. So at any rate, the real story is that the universe is a functioning engine. It's not something that was simply created and was set off running like a big clock only to end at a certain time later, 13 or 15 billion years later, and collapse in on itself. No, it's an ongoing structure. And the key to all of this is understanding that the redshift that they're measuring has nothing to do with everything moving away from us. So the whole idea of the Big Bang is completely, completely erroneous. That's an incredible realization. And so the end result is that my plasma discharge comet model, even the star systems themselves are acting like comets in the discharge of the galactic electrical capacitor. So when you see the work that I've done, it is all self-consistent. It tells you, it gives you a model for what we're seeing, not this sing-song, oh, then all of a sudden there was a sun and then there was a solar wind. And, you know, I mean, there are so many holes in that storyline that is just beyond belief that they would even publish that. But there again, that's the standard line. That's what they want to present, and that's what you get. Okay, remember that this week the paid cast is going to deal with cybersecurity, and I'm going to give you a little introduction into this right now. When you sit down at your computer and you're just typing, what's going on there? Say you type the letter H. That sends a signal into the processor, and if you're in an editing program or something like that, okay. But what happens when you're doing, say, internet work? When you hit the return key or you go out and do an internet search, what's going on there? If you do banking online, how is that secure? Or how is it not secure? How is the NSA getting into your computer, even though you have purchased spyware and or the so-called virus protection and firewall? How is the NSA still getting into your computer? And how are hackers getting into your computer? With all of the hacking with the DNC and the political parties and the government servers and everything, how are they hacking it? What's this hacking stuff all about? How does that work? Where does the NSA come into all of this? How do telecommunications protocols work? What's a thing called retransmission? What if you have a bad line and you have a lot of errors? How does that message still get across that line? Tremendous amount of information I'm giving in the paid cast, so I encourage you to go sign up for that. These are very important topics, and this is super important for students to understand. How does that cell phone work, your computer, you know, the digital TV, etc.? This is all included in the same topic. So go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. And also remember the red letter sale on my filter elements. In the filters, you get 4 filter elements where other people are trying to sell you 2 of the old filter elements for the same price. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.